Welcome to Table Talks with Kay Woodward. Married for more than 43 years, Kay and her husband Galen have three married sons, nine grandchildren, and are longtime pastors in Albuquerque, New Mexico. With the recent release of her new cookbook, which is filled with treasured recipes and stories, she's excited to bring you into her world of faith and family. So, take a seat at the table with Kay as she welcomes special guests from varied backgrounds and stages of life to dive into relevant and important topics of today. Please enjoy today's episode.
On today's episode of Table Talks, I'll be talking with Sarah Beckman. She's an acclaimed author, a speaker, and currently campus pastor at Citizen Church Maui. She's married to Craig, and they've been married for over 31 years. She has three adult children, and now she has three grandchildren. Join us today as we chat about the do's and don'ts of helping people going through hard times. Sarah, I am so excited to have you on Table Talks today. And this is the coolest thing. You're on Maui most all the time now because that's where you live. So to have you in person while we're recording this is just a special treat. I've been so looking forward to this. I'm excited to be with you in person.
Me too. I always love to be in Albuquerque and at the original table.
I know. And I'm just glad to have you. I'm really so happy to see you in person. I'm glad we get to spend a few days together. But we're just going to jump right in. I've already mentioned that you're an author and a pastor and you're a speaker and all that, but I've got your books with me and I've really enjoyed prepping for this podcast, rereading the books and getting to know you. Now that I know you, I think when these came out, I had just met you at the church. I really didn't know you that well, but now that I really know you and I've served alongside you, these mean even so much more to me. But you wrote alongside, which we're going to talk about the most today. You wrote it in, I looked in the front cover, it said 2017.
Yes.
And Hope in the Hard Places was 2019. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, girl, you set yourself up. I mean, you wrote these intense books. And then in 2020, February, you took a position with Citizen Church and you said yes, you and your husband, to going to the island of Maui to become campus pastor for Citizen Church Maui. And literally 2 weeks later, the whole world shut down for the pandemic. So I wanted to talk. We're going to go back to your books, but I wanted to talk for a little bit about 2020 and then the last few years and what your life has looked like. And so I want everybody to know you like I do. So tell us about 2020.
Well, 2020, I said yes to the church, and it was pretty much like for Craig and I, it was very much a leap of faith because there was a lot of unanswered questions. And the original model was he would continue his job in Albuquerque and come to Maui, and I would come to Central Campus and we would have a nice flow. And then my first actual day was March 4th, and we had two Sundays with the building open, and then we shut down for COVID. And so my first response was, God, you had it wrong. Like, I don't understand. He was there at the beginning.
And then he went back.
He had to leave. Yes. He left. Correct. He left the 21st of March with our girls who came to celebrate my installation as pastor. And then while there, found out that they were not going back to college. And so then he came to our home in Albuquerque with our girls so they could come home and remote learn. And it was the first time in our marriage that we'd ever gone as long as we went without talking to or seeing each other, not talking, but seeing. And it was 6 weeks. Oh. And we'd never been more than 12 days. And at that point, we were married, 26 years or something. So I first thought God had it wrong. I mean, definitely. But the books, my life, my story prepared me in a way I never really could understand for what was coming.
And if people don't know, Hawaii was locked down to a different level. I mean, in New Mexico, we were locked down longer than most states. I mean, everybody was locked down at first, but we just kept the lockdown and lockdown. But the islands were a whole different ballgame because, like Maui, such a small little island, and the medical system, hospitals could not, take it if visitors came and got sick. There wasn't enough beds. So it was intense.
Remote. So remote and just very not equipped for anything of this magnitude. So it was completely I was brand new to pastoring. I wasn't new to like loving and shepherding people, but brand new to the role of being a pastor, and then to feel responsible for a church that I couldn't even see in person. I was making phone calls to people saying like, "Hey, in case you didn't know, I'm your new pastor. And by the way, can I pray for you? And how are you doing in the middle of this pandemic? And what are you doing?"
Also, what I didn't realize till we started going to Maui when our church, got this new campus, was that so much of West Maui, Lahaina, Yes. It's the service industry. I don't know the percentage, but so many people are connected to the service industry because of tourism. Right. And when that was stopped, Then most of your church, of the church did not have jobs or a way to get groceries. And the island of West Maui was really suffering and not able to feed their families, et cetera. So I just, before we really get into the books, this is just what I don't want people to forget. What Citizen Church Maui did in 2020 and 21 for West Maui, Lahaina. Just tell us a little bit.
Well, it was interesting because, again, brand new. I had been visiting the island and serving the community for a few months. So I knew people, but I didn't know people. When you don't live in Maui, you're considered an outsider. And the term is haole, right? So I was as haole as they get, right? I'm a girl from
Minnesota.
Yes, exactly, my accent. And I'm a little bit like you, very strong and fierce and independent. And I don't like wait for, you know, and Maui's on a little different role. But I got a phone call from someone from Cisco Corporation, which is like the big food distribution. Yes. And they literally said, "Hey, we heard your name from this person and that person that you guys might be willing to take some groceries and give them out to your church. And if you could like even just, you know, give us a couple hundred dollars to pay our driver, we're going to lose all this food. So we're getting rid of anything we can't freeze. Can you help us?" And the date was March 23rd. And so because of that, then we basically went all the way. We started on the 23rd. We were in the middle of a distribution of all this produce and all these different, you know, like everything gorgeous, pineapples and lettuce and just gorgeous food. And he called me in the middle of it on that first day. And he said, "Do you want to do it again on Friday?" And I was like, and we were worried about the stay-at-home orders and could we even be operating.
And you're doing this out of a church. It's not a huge building.
We started out of a restaurant because we were so nervous to be in the church. So we did it out of a restaurant because they had permission to be open.
And you didn't want to get in trouble.
I didn't want to get in trouble. And I didn't know anyone and I didn't know the rules and I didn't know anything.
None of us knew the rules.
Thank God I didn't know anything or I would have never, ever, ever signed myself up for this. But yeah, so we just started feeding people and Cisco was amazing. And over the year, it was just miraculous. An organization called Mercy Chefs, they started funding our groceries. I had served with them in the past and really learned how to love people in crisis. And I'm from a big family, 14 kids. And we just always, everything was big and I just knew how to do this. And I had been doing it and living alongside for so long. I mean, for so long previous to moving there. So it was a little bit of autopilot, but the heart of the church to love our neighbor, the heart of the people there was phenomenal. And so we just started on March 23rd of 2020 and we did grocery boxes every single week. And we did not stop for 14 months.
14 months. I want you guys to hear that. 14 months because Maui didn't open back up for tourists for, you know, everybody else kind of on the mainland, a lot of states were going back to their normal life and Maui did not.
Yeah.
And it was you. And how many people would, how many boxes did we
Oh my gosh. You know, we did, I think we estimated our very best estimate, like 1.5 million pounds of food. We worked with the Maui Food Bank. We worked in the end with Farmers and Families program through the government. And at one point we started with 75 boxes that first day. And by Christmas of the pandemic, the first year, 2020, we did 750 boxes of groceries for 3 weeks straight. And then 1,000 boxes of groceries
every single week.
Yeah.
For those last years, see it with the drone, the line of cars lining up to get into Citizen Church Maui to drive through there. Yeah. And not only did you give food, but you would have a tent for prayer. If people just needed prayer, they could come there and get prayer because you guys couldn't even meet at the church for a long time and have church
next to their car window.
You couldn't even have church. I mean, so that was, I mean, that's a year, over a year.
Yes.
So things just kind of got back to normal for the end of 21 to 22.
Correct.
And then August, the church was growing like bigger But God was doing so many things. Yes. You were seeing the fruit of the labor and
relaxing a little, like breathing. Okay, this is why. Yes.
This is what Pastor Citizen.
Yeah, this is what it means not preaching to a car shields window, windshields.
And then on August 8th, 2023, we got a call, and we were watching the news and seeing that some fires were starting in West Maui. And then nobody really knew for hours to the extent of that. But, you know, most people, if you just think back, or you can Google August 8th, fires in Lahaina, within a matter of hours, minutes, the entire of Lahaina town, old Lahaina, was engulfed in flames and burned down. And, you know, our church, I don't know how many families went there then, several hundred people, but maybe 100 families or 75 families, but half of our church lost their homes. Right. And where you just had a year to breathe, then all of a sudden the fires hit. And once again, the church was able to be the neighbor and the friend and be the hands and feet of Jesus. So just kind of cleared out of the pandemic, and here come the fires. And when I say fires, I mean, if a lot of people in the United States on the mainland have been to Maui and love that whole, the whole vibe of that. And they understand. They, it's near and dear to our hearts. Yes. But can you just real quickly tell us, I mean, our church, the church, the church, capital C church, came together, but God used Citizen Church Maui to be the home base to once again start feeding people who were left homeless because of the fire. So I got to go last August and be a part of the relief effort for a week. And I was forever changed, but I'd love for you again, because this is gonna all go back to the books you wrote, you know, 5 and 7 years ago or whatever, to prepare for this time. But when people are always saying, what can I do? This is, our church took action so quickly. So catch us up to speed on what happened the evening of August 8th?
Yeah, well, I think that Citizen in general has a DNA of going outside of the norm, of going beyond, going into the land of where people aren't willing to go, really. I mean, a lot of churches do and are amazing, but some say it's too hard, or we don't have the resources or the manpower. And we are a small church, I mean, for considering. And so it was just never a question. It is so ingrained in the DNA of the people in Maui in general. Everyone was willing to help each other, but we, our church, yes,
Ohana.
Yes, it's very much, it's just family, family, family. And generally, so people have an understanding, you know, we were on watch all night long the first night to see if the fires were going to keep heading north to us. So we were cars parked ready to have to even go further north. And we had about 150 plus people, dogs, birds, babies, cats, the whole nine yards, everywhere in the church sleeping the first night. And then we started feeding people. And ironically, we were having our serve day, which would have been our fifth annual serve day, similar to our central campus serve day. And some churches around the country do it. And so ours was going to be that weekend. And we had food that we had purchased ahead. And so our team just began making food immediately. But it was just hours before we knew how treacherous it really was, and all night watching to make sure the church would be okay, that we didn't have to leave. And, but people weren't, they weren't worried about themselves. And perspective is, we were about 6 minutes north of where the fire stopped burning eventually. 6 minutes.
And so many people that were there helping even the first night had already lost, they knew that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. 40 to 50% of our church. And that's just losing the place they lived. Some owned, some rented. But then you think about the impact of jobs. And it's the whole church. And it's like any ginormous thing, the way that the world was united in the pandemic, we were all in the same boat. This is like a whole entire community. Lahaina's around like 12 to 14,000 people that actually live there. It's very small. And everyone was affected, whether you knew someone that lost their life, or you knew you lost your job, or you, your best friend lost their home. It was, there was not one person unaffected. And so, but people were there serving nonstop, and we never stopped serving. And it was really, as you know, because you came early on, It was night and day, and we were very cut off. We had no images the way you all had images. We didn't even know what the reality was of the situation because we had no cell service and people were lost from each other. And it was just, it was nothing like I've ever experienced before, but there was not a moment of hesitation by anyone in the church or who goes to the church or who showed up at the church to just start working and serving people.
People brought you guys generators because the church had no electricity at first. Generators and other churches on the other side of the island were coming in their sailboats to West Maui to help, you know, get stuff to you guys. And then again, Mercy Chefs jumps in again to say, you know, let us provide, let us help with meals. And but Citizen Church jumped in and did all the serving and delivering meals. I walked in those areas and smelled the smells and the burn, and I won't ever forget it. And and calling out to people that could, they had nowhere else to go. Yes. They were so one house would burn, and right next to it, the house would be standing.
Right.
And the people were living there, and all that. It was just, it's unforgettable. And we're coming up, you know, this fall will be the 1 year anniversary for that fire, which is insane. But again, how long did we serve meals to people?
We did hot meals for almost a month. And then we started a program where we had family style meals.
Yes.
And those were picked up 3 days a week and delivered into these very high need areas that still had no electricity, no water. People weren't wanting to leave their house and go to a shelter or go to the other side of the island, which was their only option. So they stayed with nothing. And so we ministered and served. And there would be little pop-up grocery stores at people's houses, as you saw in some of the neighborhoods. And we just kept serving. And then we would do community dinners at the church. We had a big tent that someone donated, and we just served people. So we did food for, you know, intensely for a month, and then continuously for another like 6 to 8 weeks, and with great partners.
And then the school, the church opened up and housed an elementary school, maybe a middle school too, I don't remember.
Yes, mostly elementary
mm-hmm. to come for a few weeks because they had nowhere else to go. So we did that. So in hindsight, as I'm rereading these books you wrote, and especially Alongside, the byline to Alongside is a practical guide for loving your neighbor in the time of trial.
Right.
I'm thinking, it's a good thing you wrote this guideline, this guidebook for people, but I felt like I was just watching you in action. So God gave you the vision for these books well before you had any idea you were going to need all of this information. I mean, you'd helped people along the way, and you had some physical things you had gone through in the past where people had helped you. But I want to get into that because all that story just sets up what I want to talk about today. And what's interesting is we were talking earlier before we started recording this podcast about the process and the journey God takes us on.
Yeah.
And He doesn't make accidents. He doesn't have mess ups and oopses.
Right.
And he puts us in places, and he knew exactly who he was putting at Citizen Church Maui for such a time as this. Mm-hmm. And I think that term gets used sometimes where people don't really understand totally the meaning of that. But when you are walking in it, and you, I think, stop and say, God, I get it.
Yes.
I'm prepared.
Yes.
I'm ready. You weren't nervous or wringing your hands. I felt like I watched you in action. So I read this book and I think, it's you, and God gave you this. So I feel like so many people may be listening or watching and thinking, I want to be that person. I mean, I want to know how to help people in time of need, or I want to be a good neighbor. I want to be a good friend, but I tend to clam up. Some people would say they clam up because they don't know what to do, to do first or how to say it or what's crossing the line.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just going to jump into some of that because I wrote down some questions that I thought, that you could give great, you know, give good advice to. And one of those was, what do you say to someone who says, I want to help, but I'm afraid of doing the wrong thing? And honestly, I thought that when I came to Maui to help, because I'm not living that life. I'm an outsider coming in. And it's the same thing if you go on a mission trip or anytime you're not in the trial, you're not it's not in happening to your life. You feel kind of weird thing offering advice, but you give such practical advice. So let's just start there. What would you say to someone who wants to help, but they don't even, they're afraid to do or say the wrong thing?
Yes. Well, it's so real. And I think that not doing anything can really ruin relationships. And one of the things we talk about in the book, and we discuss this a tiny bit, is this knowing like kind of where you stand relationally with someone. And once you understand, is this person very close to me? Are they just someone that a friend of a friend of a friend? So I've kind of laid out relationship tiers in the book, 1, 2, 3, 4, meaning 1 is those people closest to you, 2 is the next layer, and 3 and 4. And so I think that gives us a lot of permission to know where we need to actually ask and how. And I've referenced that throughout the whole book. It's like, this is a great way for you. If you're in tier 4, if you don't really know them, send a card, send a gift card. Like, it's impersonal, right? But if they're a close friend or a family member, and then you haven't acknowledged it, like, there, it's going to hurt. It's going to fracture some relationships in the future. So that's the first way that I think it gives us so much permission and actually like courage to say, okay, this is my place. I don't have to help everyone. I can help those that are right there in my sphere. And that's enough, because if you don't know someone today, you will eventually, right? We all in the moment probably know people, but it's just, where are they in our relationship circle? And so what do we do? You know, there's just showing up. And I think of just so many instances, but I remember when my sister was losing her husband and I lived out of state and all of my siblings lived near and they all were there day in and day out. And so then I was coming in for this short visit, kind of say my goodbyes, if you will. And I remember just knowing that I needed to just be present and have no agenda. And like, that's a tier 1. She's my sister, but also I have 6 sisters. So I'm closer to some than others. But in the end, what I felt from her was that my just being present and not trying to take all sorts of action offered a proximity of relationship where then when I was there, if it just would work on my computer, the kitchen table, my other sisters, God bless them, they might have been like in the kitchen and trying to clean the fridge and doing all these things. And she was so annoyed. And that does seem like a good thing, but like permission, asking, what do you need right now? If you don't know, no problem. I'm right here. I think when we don't know what to do, the best thing in any situation is, how can I serve you? Which sort of leads into something else about the book, if I may just
please jump.
But, you know, first just asking, how can I serve you? If they aren't answering, if they don't know, don't take it personally. It's not about you, right? If you know them well enough.
You say that in the book.
Yes.
That's really critical to know from the get-go. We try to make everything about us.
Oh, they haven't called me back. Oh, they didn't text me. Oh, they didn't say thank you.
But if we take that out of the, that's out of the equation.
Yeah,
it's not about me.
Right.
Then I can truly be okay.
Yes. If they need me or not.
Or they don't acknowledge me.
Yes. If they don't say thank you, if they didn't write me an eloquent thank you letter or return my, you know, favorite dish that I should never have brought, like, don't bring anything that they need back, that you need back. So I would say being present is so important, but without that agenda, or if you're asking and they don't really know how to answer you, because that can be really annoying when you just keep saying, let me know how I can help you. Let me know what I can do. Let me know what I can do.
So and unless it's a best friend, I don't know anyone that lets someone know. I mean,
and besides,
just act like it's okay.
It puts all the burden
on that person.
On the person.
Just going through the trial.
Exactly. So you've now just given them more work to do by saying, let me know, let me know, let me know. So the way to combat it is to make very specific offers. This is what I can do. And interestingly enough, the minute you look at your own life and circumstance and say, this is what I can do, and then offer that, it's so much easier for them to say yes. And if they say no, then you can pivot and think of something else to do. But most often, if it's a genuine, sincere, this is what I'm able to do, like, I'm going to Target, can I pick up your groceries? I'm going to Smith's. I'm going to the grocery store. I'm going to the post office. I'm going to the cleaners. I'm already shopping for my family. I'm already making dinner. Here's the 2 choices of what I could make. Do either of those appeal to you and your family? It's like you've taken away all this mind drama that they have to do. They can just decide and say yes or no. And it's like,
that's the most common mistake people make is putting, I see it on even social media. People say, well, let me know. And I'm thinking, who that just lost their best friend or their spouse or whatever is going to let you know? And just, this is on a, much less It's not something traumatic, yes. But just recently, we were gone in and out for gone for several weeks on a family vacation, and getting ready to come home, my good friend Tammy just messaged me and said, "Can I have some groceries in your house? What do you need to have in your house when you get back?" And she's done that more than once, and that, you know, I wasn't going through a trial necessarily or something horrible, but it was so kind to say,
so thoughtful.
"Can I get you milk and bananas and whatever else in your house?" So if you think it, just do it. I was reading that over and over, that chapter 3. I want everybody, I'm going to give you several ways when this podcast airs, how to get the book, and we're going to give some giveaways too, but chapter 3, in the know, because you say, know your place, because you just said that to me.
The tears.
Know the needs. What do they need? You said, know the person and know the guidelines, know the questions. And you don't have to know those answers because they're in the book. I mean, if you think it sounds so easy, but it's not. I feel like the art of hospitality, which this really is, is pretty, we're losing it. And gosh, just even listening to you, I'm thinking, who could I already, I would say that I feel like I do that this well, but there's always more we can do. Just you've given us practical advice just saying that, but I think a common mistake, because I see it on social media, let me know if you need anything. So we're going to say that's a big, it's a mistake.
Yeah, and chapter 5, offer specific help. It's all in there. It's all sorts of things to offer.
That's the practical advice here.
Exactly.
I'm going to the store.
Yes. I'm making dinner. I'm driving the kids to the sports thing. I'll pick yours up on the way. So you've removed the question of, do you need me to do this? Because it's so hard to say yes. And many of us have a hard time receiving, right? And so the most well-intentioned people want to give, want to serve, but it's like there's a block in most of us that doesn't want to receive. We don't want to be on the receiving, the needing, the, you know, oh, I couldn't possibly.
Because we think other people need it more than me, so I shouldn't let people do this for
me. But or just, it's not that bad. Oh, really? Like, it doesn't, there's no, like, scale.
Yes, there's no scale. Because it's just, it's personal. We're going through it.
Right.
So it's just our personal.
And even through the fire, you know, we had a lot of people asking, what do you need? What do you need? Right. And it was very interesting because sometimes people want to help with what they want to help with and not what's actually needed. So if you're asking, you better be ready to hear if you really want to know, because one of the things we just tangibly needed was money. And we talked through that because we did a whole event with women and Flourish and could we get these women that have are, you know, fire survivors, all these things. And we had such a great, beautiful,
glamorous.
Exactly.
Family.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yes. Oprah, here you go. Like, here's your gift. Yes. I said what they really need is in this moment in time is that the opportunity to make their own choices and to have that ability to choose what they want, right? Like any of us, if you've lost everything. And it was interesting because I didn't catch it right at first. I mean, call me like, I'm the alongside girl, but I totally missed it until I offered something to someone who had been through the fire. And I was like, you know, we'll go get this, 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 and this for you while you're away. And they said, you know what? We would actually kind of like to choose that for ourselves. And I was like, yes, you would. Of course you would. And so you don't, but it allowed them, because I made a specific offer, we can get these things for you. Then they just were able to shift it.
But because it wasn't about you. And even when you told Pastor Mandy and myself that actually what they really need is money, because we could say, okay, this isn't about us. We could raise the money.
Right.
And because it wasn't about you, you were able to say, okay. Right. Okay, we've got it.
And we did have countless people over the year, in the last year, offer, you know, we want to do this, we want to do this. And there was many things that kind of put a burden on us of more work, of the thing they wanted to do to help. And honestly, wow, that was really hard because people mean really well and they're very well-intentioned. So I think that's just a nuance of alongsiding, is my word for it, is that when you're doing it, you just have to have a really open heart. Of course, listen to the Holy Spirit and know that God's going to guide it. But if you're making it about you and your agenda, then you're sunk before you start.
And you're going to be disappointed.
Yes.
And feelings hurt and the whole thing. That is just so good. I feel like all we learn on this podcast is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
It's not about me. It's about the person I'm going alongside.
Yeah. Asking questions, making specific offers, it allows the shift. And then they can say, oh, because you've already kind of, it's like a presumptive sell. right? Mm-hmm. In sales, you assume the sale. In this situation, you're assuming you're going to help them. And so the minute you make that assumption to make this specific thing, then they're like, well, I don't really need that, but I need this. And, you know, so you guys knew, and a lot of people didn't necessarily want to do what we needed. And, you know, we had to be okay with just standing our ground too. And I think that kind of goes to like hope in the hard places, which is, I wrote it because when I was delivering messages and traveling and speaking about Alongside, people kept saying, okay, well, that book is for like, if I want to help someone in my life that's going through it, but what about me? I'm in the middle of it. And there's a lot of agency talk, if you will, in Hope in the Hard Places. Like, you don't sit in your misery alone and just expect everyone to assume that they know, because most people don't know what we're talking about. Make specific offers, right? They don't know it. So you actually have to like ask for what you need. You have agency to say, like, thank you for being in my life. Thank you for coming to my home. Thank you for showing up. But this is what I actually need right now. And that's so important. And most of us think it just makes us more of a victim again to the circumstance that we're going through. And so we just, it's like, we think people can read our minds. We talk about this in marriage. Your husband can't read your mind. You have to actually tell him. The pamphlet on the bedstand is not going to do it.
No,
you need to use real words.
I don't want this. I do want that.
Yes, exactly. That's,
I'm just thinking through so many scenarios in my own life. And when I've needed help, and before it, I've got my feelings hurt over the years,
yes,
thinking, why didn't they just know? Why wouldn't they just know what I need?
Yes.
I mean, they know I just had surgery, or they know my mom just died. And so
yes,
many people did.
Yes.
But, you know, I have to watch myself because I'm keeping like a scorecard.
I know.
Okay, she came, they called,
yes,
they text.
Yes.
I got that
yes
from my daddy. He would do that. He'd go, well, so-and-so never came to the hospital.
My mom did it too.
I know.
She has 14 kids. She would have the list in her mind, mental roll call.
I've got a list.
Oh, I didn't hear from that brother. I didn't hear from that sister.
And
you didn't call me.
And Gayla would say, you've got to stop taking
yes
score,
yes,
keeping score of who's doing what for you, because it had me messed up. So
yes,
that people don't need to, you know, and if you need a spokesperson, maybe you're going through something and,
yes,
and you feel only comfortable to tell your closest friend.
Right.
And then closest friend can say to people, and I do that a lot for people. People will come to me at the church and say, so-and-so needs a meal train. And I'll say, this is how we're going to do it.
Right.
Because they don't need food every day because they can't eat it all. We're
yes
going to do it this way. Or they would prefer gift cards because, you know,
right,
I mean, everybody's not good at home cooking.
And also people have so many different food needs these
so
days.
And
they can choose
yes
their favorites,
dietary restrictions and
right
all that. Because one of the things you say, we're talking about taking action and your Alongside book is to love with food.
Yes.
And I wrote a cookbook. If you don't know what
yes
to cook, you can get that too. But it's so true. Food really does bless our hearts.
Yeah, like when I had surgery last November, you brought me a cake. And I mean, that's the way to my heart. Sugar food cake. I was like, oh my
good
gosh, this is the greatest thing. You brought it hot and warm and it just blessed us so much.
Isn't that, you really can love with
yeah
food. Food does a lot for people. But if you're not, you know, people say, well, I don't cook or I don't have time.
Yeah.
And what we just said, you can do
DoorDash gift cards. It's super helpful. We were staying in an Airbnb in Albuquerque. And
you don't have to think about
so
it.
Great.
It's so nice. So if you don't know what to do, always food is a place. You can
yes
eat groceries, either bringing groceries, buying groceries, bringing a cake. I invited a young lady that I met this spring, and I took a hot cake and with an invitation to come to our Easter services. And I did not know when I just met her the
right
week before that day her mom had brain tumor surgery
oh
and was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. I mean, and I took the cake and God used it for something else. And I thought I was inviting her to come to Easter at Citizen.
Right.
But God used it for what he wanted to. So you also say
good
respect people's journey,
yeah,
offer specific help, which you just said, be present. I can't stress that enough, and I know, you know, you said it, but sometimes just sitting in the room,
yeah,
and I'm a talker, so I get nervous,
yes,
and I think I've just got to keep the conversation
yes
going for 2 hours, when sometimes you just get on your computer
yeah
and just be there.
Right. Make the food in the kitchen if you're, you know, tier one, but I do think that there's something so powerful. People get afraid to show up because they don't know what to say. It causes a barrier, you know? And I mean, I have had friendships that it's been really hard. You know, we've been in a hard season and I had a lot of people that just didn't say anything. And I was like, I don't need you to fix it or solve it. I just need you to acknowledge that I'm living it, you know? And so it's, but the ministry of presence, it reminds us of the Bible, of course. Like, why is there this whole thing of sitting Shiva with someone for 7 days in the Jewish culture? And Jesus was Jewish, right? So you sit with them because it's a way of expressing, I am literally alongside you. And that's what so many people from our central campus did. They came, they showed up, they were open-handed. And the number one training that everyone got, which you know, which they asked me, what do you need? And I said, we just need people like open-handed to show up and recognize we're in trauma. We're in shock. And we need just people to say, whatever you need to do, we'll do. And
be willing to do anything.
Yes, we'd be willing to do anything because we were in disaster relief mode. This wasn't a natural, normal church flow of process. And there was not one person that didn't come with that heart posture, but it was just like expressing what you need. And then people just showing up and just sitting next to us and hearing our grief and crying with us was so important because none of you were living that reality as we were.
We were going to leave it. We were going to get on a plane a week later and leave that. And I want to go back because when you're saying people, you had a really, it's been a crazy few years for you. Yes. And you've had a journey this year with your own physical health. And on this side of it, God's been good and you're doing great. But I have had this happen to me and I've done it to people. And I wanted to bring this up because sometimes when someone's going through something and we don't reach out right away, then a day goes by and 2 days and 3 days and it's been a week or two. And then you feel bad to reach out because it's been a month and you never said anything.
Right.
So that's what I think what happens sometimes to people.
Right.
And so I'm keeping the score for people that have called me, you know. But then I realized they probably feel like, how do I reach out now? I should have already reached out. I mean, I don't even know the answer to this, but I'm wondering, when you realize that you've messed up and you didn't reach out.
Do something now. It's never too late. You just do it. You just do it.
Could you say,
I'm so sorry.
I didn't know what to say.
Just be honest. I mean, that's all anyone really wants.
For me, I didn't know what to say. It's not even that I'm too busy. It's like, I don't know how to. Sometimes people are going through something so off. I mean, I can't even fathom what they're going through. If I try to say something, I'm afraid I'm going to say something stupid.
Right.
And, you know, I met someone recently, and she's just a jewel and a young lady in a post office. And she was mailing books and I was mailing my cookbooks. And I said, did you write those books? And she said, yes, they're children's books. And she said, I wrote them for my girls and they're only other people in the post office. How many times are there two people in the post office?
Never.
And only other people in the post office were her little girls. And she said, I wrote it for them as part of their healing. Their dad was killed in a car accident and, with them in the car, these two, and I was 7 months pregnant with their little sister.
Wow.
And she is a young lady, and it happened just a few years ago, and she wrote a children's book as part of the healing process for them, and that started this conversation. Well, I'm standing there going, I don't know what to do.
Right.
I don't know what to say. That's the worst. This is horrible. He was taking his little girls to preschool, and a tragedy happened, and he was airlifted and died, and she had to find out about it. It was just the worst thing imaginable.
Yes.
And so I didn't know what to do. And I said, what a beautiful thing you've done for your daughters. And I can't even imagine. I'm so sorry. I'll be praying for you. Anyway, long story short, I went out to my car immediately and ordered her book. And then she ordered my cookbook. And we met for coffee at Citizen Coffee at the North Campus. And I've developed this relationship with her. And I still don't understand what she's going through. I won't ever. But I felt like I needed to do something right that second. Like if I don't respond to her, if I wait days, I'm going to feel really bad.
Right.
You know, but my tendency sometimes is to not say anything because I don't know what to say. Like when you first told me what you were going through last year, I mean, I don't know what to say.
Yeah. Well, there is that whole notion of like listening, not fixing, right? And as women, I think we can resonate with that because we want from our husbands or men in our lives or other relationships, sometimes we just want people to listen to us. There's no fixing it. Can't take away the fact that, you know, we went through a pandemic and then we went through a fire and then our grandchildren were in the NICU for 40 days and then I got breast cancer. Like you can't take it away. However, you can just be present with someone and like just share the burden. And it's literally biblical. I mean, Galatians, right? It just says like, carry one another's burdens and such you're doing the will of Christ. And so we think there's a magic thing. There isn't. It's just listening and presence. And really there is like a chapter in the book, because I tried to cover everything. It's not like the be all end all by any means, but you know, I interviewed so many people that went through hard things when I was creating this. It was like a research project. And I interviewed over 50 people, maybe even 100. And I asked them what was helpful and what wasn't. And so there is a chapter about what to say and what not to say, because many times we don't know. And I think
I looked at that and yes. I thought, please, everybody. And I'm going to tell you how to get this book. You may not need it today,
yeah,
but you will. I'm telling you, read it before you need it, because you're going to need to help someone.
And you affirmed her in the post office. And that's the number one principle. You listened. You can't fix it. You affirmed what she was going through by just giving a patient, loving face and body language and all of it. And it goes such a long way. We think that we have to do something. And honestly, listening is a something. It literally is. Listening, it's a rare form of art these days to find people who will truly listen. And, you know, just even how you ministered to me when we were in Virginia helping our son and daughter-in-law, and they were in, you know, the NICU and home and in NICU, you know, and just texting me and asking about the babies, it just like showed me I wasn't alone.
And I made this wonderful relationship with your daughter-in-law, Megan, who... through the whole process with your grandchildren, I became friends with her on Instagram, and I really feel like we're friends. Like, I can't wait to meet her in person, but it's just being open. And I didn't know that God had a new relationship for me in the middle of, but I really did care. I think I would say that the majority of human, you know, people, our human nature, we do care. We are busy, and we do let our things we're going through sometimes get so big that we can't be there for someone else. But I will say this, and I know it says it in here, but when I, and the Bible says it, but when I do for others, it really does help me. When I went to Maui to help last summer after the fires, and when I went to Haiti to help, you know, 3 years ago, and wherever we go on missions trips or wherever we help, it does as much for me or more than it does for who I'm going to help if I'll just be... be present. I just, that's so beautiful. And you are that way.
Well,
that you really, you are. And I would imagine that with 14 of you in your family, that you can't be selfish.
Right.
I would say selfishness is not part of
It's not part of the deal. But I do think that there's this notion when you go back to those relationship tiers, you know exactly who is yours to help. Because otherwise it's overwhelming, and that's why people do nothing, because they just get overwhelmed. Everywhere we look in our life, there's need.
So and so we just say, you don't know what to do first. So let's say this. Practical as we're... Why did these podcasts go by so fast? So practical tips if you... okay, two things. If you're going through something and you're, you know, no one's reaching out, so you need to reach out to someone, right?
You got to ask for what specifically you need. It's like the flip. Make a specific offer and ask for specific things. And one thing you said earlier is like have a person, right? And that there is that notion in the book of like assigning or, you know, asking someone to be your chief operating officer. And so I think that that is really helpful when we're trying to think through that, is like, you know, even that person can help, because you can tell them, your close person, this is what I really need. And like you said, they can help. Right. But if it's your family, you have to just be brave, and they may not come through for you, but at least you know you've tried.
And you can't be aggravated.
And you cannot if you've asked for what you needed.
And if they don't come through because you never asked anyone, because my tennis, people tend to think that because I'm a fixer, that I have it all under control all the time. And I'm like, no, I'm dying over here I need help, but I don't ever act like I do. So people think I'm just fine. Okay. So on the flip side, if I want to help, so we're going to end this podcast talking about some practical tips right away I can do. So there's someone, every one of us knows someone in our life that needs someone to come alongside. So what's the first thing I do right now when I listen to this podcast and I turn it turns off? What do I do first?
First, just make a little list of the names and figure out what relationship level they are. If they're number one on your list, tier one, close to you, then make a plan to see them. Like make a plan and do that thing where you just make a very specific offer. Number two, if they're tier two, then you can kind of move through the layers, but like you could shoot a text because it's a little more like less personal, unless you're super tight and it's your sister and you text all the time. But like, I feel like a text is for really close people, you know, right? Like I'm not texting like a random third tier friend. Exactly. So, you know, two is like maybe a meal, right? Like offer, find a meal train or make the food. And one, there's so many great ideas, but one of the things I love is just like practical groceries or even just paper goods. You can just literally leave like a stack of like plates and napkins and cute somethings, or you can do like breakfast items. People rarely remember to do breakfast items. So you could make a burrito, wrap it up. They can warm it in the microwave, put it in wax paper. Easy. So just put it on their doorstep. Like I've had moments where I'm like, this person needs something now. I'm not asking permission. I'm not checking the calendar. I'm not figuring out the meal train. I'm doing the thing and I'm leaving it on the door and I'm going to send a text and say it's there and you let it go. And then, you know, there's cards, there's texts. I do a lot of like written prayers, or even audio prayers if it's someone you know well. And if someone is in like a crisis right now, one of the greatest instant blessings you can do is just pause, sit, reflect, get yourself ready and do an audio prayer for them because they will play it over and over and over again. And writing, it's even better because they can keep it, but you can keep an audio message too. So those are just some of my quick tips of like what to do right now.
And you haven't waited too long. So it doesn't matter if it's been
it's never too late.
Weeks. And you just, like you said, say what happened, say the truth, say, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I should have reached out before how you now. Would feel. I mean, and how would I feel if someone sent me a message 4 months later? I would just be super grateful that they acknowledged it.
Yes.
Like that, you know, Craig always does that to me. He says, flip the coin. How would you feel if someone wants to help you and you said, you know, like if you want to help someone and they said, no. Like you would be so sad because you want to help them. So allow them to help you because they want to or they wouldn't be asking.
I love that. Flip the coin. They're yes. So, and you're going to, you know, if you're driving down the road listening or you're watching while you're getting ready, you're going to forget some of what we said. But that's what I love when I get to interview an author because these thoughts are in the books and you really can go back because it's meant to be a guideline.
Yes.
It really is. And I'm just excited for people to get the book. So in the description of this podcast, what I'll write is I'll, you know, tell you how to find the books and tell them how to find the books. And I have just this wonderful library now over this last 6 months that I started this podcast or 4 months, renewing, you know, my mind and giving me new energy and new ideas and vision and guidelines. Well, I love practical tips.
You're a great alongsider already, but thank you for
I felt my mom was. I watched it patterned, and I hope that my children watch me because I'm just a product of my mom. And I really do want to bless people's life. I mean, that's what I want to do. So I feel, you know, you're talking about praying and everything, but I feel like maybe there are hurting people listening and watching that they're hurt and no one has come alongside. Yeah. Or there's, you know, those who really just want to be open to what the Holy Spirit says to them. So would you just mind closing in prayer?
Absolutely.
And this, I feel like that would be a great thing.
Yes. Oh, thank you. God, we thank you for this opportunity to talk about things that ultimately are based in your word. You tell us to love our neighbor as ourself. You tell us to carry one another's burdens. And so today I'm praying, God, for a bold courage for that person that didn't send the text or didn't go or show up or feels like it's too late. God, I pray for a holy boldness and a courage because I absolutely believe it's never too late. And with a humble and contrite heart, right, we're all just trying to do our best. And so I pray for courage for those people. And in return, I also pray for someone who's just going through it, who doesn't know how to ask for what they need. God, would you help them? Would you bring a person alongside them to love them well, or someone they can ask to enlist to help get some needs met? But if they don't have anyone, I pray for a local church, God. I really just believe the local church is such an answer to community and to people walking alongside their loved, you know, their neighbor in trial, in joy, in all of it. And so I pray for people to find a local church. If someone's like, I haven't been to church in years, I could never step foot. I just pray today, barriers broken, that they would hear this as it pierces their heart. That says, this is a word from God to me to get myself back to church or to try it for the first time, because it's where people are helped. Hurting people are helped. in the Lord's house. And so, Lord, give courage, give boldness, give us humility. Help us not make it about ourselves when we want to love our neighbor. And for those that are walking through just unending difficulty, hardship, Lord, would you be their strength, but would you bring great, amazing, tender-hearted people alongside them to walk the journey? Thank you for this opportunity. Amen.
Thank you so much. I just love, I love doing these podcasts, and I love you, and I'm so glad you're in my life, and I'm glad we've been able to walk alongside each other the last few years. God bless you. Thank you so much, Sarah. Thank you for joining me today on Table Talks. For more content and information about upcoming episodes, please visit my website at kwoodward.com. You can also explore other podcast links and resources there. Until next time.